Welcome back. You're here with Dave and Faisal on 770 CHQR and More Than Money. Faisal, we talk a lot about lifestyle, and part of lifestyle planning is transition planning. And that means wills, legacies, so on and so forth.
Yeah, I think when you see more and more people as they age are more concerned about how this money's getting transferred over to their loved ones or to charities of their choice. And one of the biggest concerns that I hear about, and because mainly we get a lot of the information coming out of Ontario, is probate fees and what's the cost, and how do we mitigate that or minimize those costs. And so let's have a bit of a chat about that.
Yeah. And so we've got Catherine Zhang joining us today, a recurring guest with us. She's an associate at Walsh LLP. Catherine, thanks for taking some time with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Maybe we can start the conversation with a bit about what probate is. Maybe you can just educate our listeners about probate, and then we can talk about its application in Alberta versus other provinces.
Yeah, so probate is a court order that an executor or personal representative will have to get in order to process some of the assets that an individual who's passed away owns. Typically, probate is required if you have real property in Alberta or if you have a bank account with a sizable asset or wealth in that account. Those institutions will require court order. And so if you've got a will, it's usually called a grant of probate. If you don't have a will, court order is still required, but that process is going to be called getting a grant of administration. And at the end of the day, when the process is complete and you get an order, that personal representative will have the authority bestowed upon them by the court to say, yes, you can go ahead and administer this individual's assets.
Okay. So got it. Now let's talk a little bit about, there's some differences, jurisdictional differences between.
Well, let's back up and talk about the cost. There's a cost to this. There's a fee, a probate fee.
Yeah. So I was going to say, different amongst different provinces. So
let's start
in Alberta.
Let's talk
about what the cost of probate is in Alberta.
Yeah. So Catherine, let's do that. What's the cost here in Alberta?
So the cost to file a probate application depends on how much the estate is worth. In Alberta, we're very lucky as we're capped. And so as soon as you have over $250,000 in wealth, the highest probate court filing fee you're going to pay is $525. It's staggered. So if you, for example, own over $25,000 but less than $125,000, they're going to prorate that fee and you're paying a $275 court filing fee today's date. That doesn't include the perhaps legal cost or accounting cost of preparing that application, and so that will vary firm by firm or however you manage it. But the bottom line is the court filing fee is capped here, which is different from some of the other jurisdictions in Canada. Ontario is one example. I think BC is the other example where they take a percentage depending on how big or small the estate is.
So let me just jump in there and talk about what's classified under this fee for probate. When you say your wealth, let's take a couple. One member of the two passes away. What gets counted in probate in that situation?
The assets that get counted are whatever the deceased owned in their name alone as at date of death. So if you're dealing with a husband and wife situation and they own a house jointly and they own accounts jointly, you're not going to have anything to probate because the surviving spouse will receive all of those assets outside of the estate. If you're looking at a situation where an individual dies leaving a house in their own name alone or a bank account in their own name alone, then that asset gets calculated towards what falls into the estate and the fee for grant of probate or grant of administration.
Yeah, let's just jump in there and also mention those who have RRSPs, Registered Retirement Income Funds, or RIF, TFSA, they all have designated beneficiaries, maybe some insurances or insurance contracts. Those all have designated beneficiaries. So, Catherine, those are exempt or outside of the estate itself for probate purposes. Is that correct?
Yes, so long as the beneficiary has survived and there's no gift over to the residue of the estate, yes, that is exempt for probate purposes.
Now, lots of people try different ways to avoid the probate process. Again, there's a cap in terms of how much you have to pay
in probate, Alberta.
But there can be additional costs associated with legal and so on and so forth. So lots of people are still sensitive to that, and they want to try to minimize the time, effort, and cost associated with that. Tell us a little bit about some of the strategies that people use and what we need to be aware of if you are going to pursue some of these strategies.
Yeah, I think the biggest ones we see are either the testator, so the person dealing with their estate, wanting to get to put assets in joint names, so indicating, well, I mean, my intention is for my real property to pass to my kids anyways. I'm going to put one child on for administration purposes. I mean, that's one strategy, and we can talk about after the reasons why I don't like seeing that.
Sure.
That we would recommend against that. And then the second one is saying, you know what, I don't even need to be on title. I'm going to just transfer this asset in whole during my lifetime so that there's not, I can take out the transmission fee or the fee for filing additional paperwork with land titles. They'll just have this property outright during their lifetime. And those are the two primary examples, and those are two topics we absolutely talk to clients about during the estate planning process if mm-hmm. probate fees are one of their concerns.
Well, and a lot of people, Faisal, listening right now, say, oh, well, that's pretty smart, right? I could set up my kids on my non-registered accounts and they could just take over or mm-hmm. move my house into, you know, the kids, one of the kids or both kids' names or something along those lines. That doesn't sound like a bad idea.
So I'll take a personal situation. My father decided to do that way back in the day, and he said, you know what, I'm going to put everything mm-hmm. in joint with my son. He manages money for a living. He mm-hmm. seems responsible from a reasonable distance. Why not put everything joint with him? And then my sister gave me a dirty look when that came out. So the risks that my father was not thinking about.
Right.
Mm-hmm. One of them, Catherine, was, well, I'm now divorced. And so that could have been a problem. If I own a business, mm-hmm. or I have creditors, that could be a problem. Like, so let's talk about, you know, we've got a couple minutes left, but what are some of the problems that people should be aware of mm-hmm. when thinking about putting their property in joint with somebody else besides their spouse?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest one is the biggest message we try to get out to clients is as soon as you put somebody else on as a joint owner to one of your assets, you lose full control. And I mean, every parent goes into it thinking, you know, my kid has my best interest at heart, you know, nothing bad is going to happen. And unfortunately, time and time again, we see that kids are fallible, I should say. And sometimes stuff happens and kids either get divorced or they end up perhaps thinking mom and dad don't need the money anyways, and they start treating that money as their own or that asset as their own. And you see clients come in and say, well, I put this into joint name, but now I have lost control. I don't have the ability to have a say, or I don't know where my money is. That's a common problem that we see. And I mean, on the flip side, even if that particular child is a dream child and is committed to managing that asset pursuant to mom and dad's wishes or their parents' wishes, there is also the risk that other siblings, like your sister, Faisal, might kind of say, hold on, wait a second, what's going on here? And unintended discord in the family can arise, and unintended distrust, and so it could make family life or the family relationship a lot more complicated, and administration of that particular asset. That's one, you know, that's one of the things. And then obviously the one for the concern for distributing that asset in that person's lifetime right away is you absolutely lose full control of that asset. So the adult no longer has the ability to use those funds or use that house to their benefit because they've transferred it.
Yeah, these are the kind of risks that we're going to be talking about, Dave. When you build your wealth and when you're going through retirement, these are the concerns, but we're also going to talk about how you protect yourself in those situations. And we're going to host a seminar on Tuesday, April 17th, 7 p.m. at the Oak Ridge Co-op Wine and Spirits. We will touch on the legacy bucket. We will touch on the fact that this is the number one beneficiary, I think, is Revenue Canada, or CRA, Revenue Canada.
Well, they put their hand up. There's no question.
They're there for sure. And also, your wishes need to be looked at. And you do a great job with our clients on that, on the wishes, and working with people like Catherine on that. So if you are interested in coming to our seminar on Tuesday, April 17th, 7 p.m. at the Oak Ridge Co-op Wine and Spirits, you do need to reserve your seats. So give us a call at 966-8400, 966-8400, or go to our website to register at morethanmoneyradio.com.
Faisal, nobody sits in front of us and says, the gift I want to leave my family is a court battle and discord amongst the family.
Fair.
Okay, we're going to talk to Catherine after the break about some of the common mistakes people make and how to avoid those to make sure that that wealth is transitioned in the best way possible for your family. You're on 770 CHQR and More Than Money.